welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And you know, I was thinking over the weekend how much courage, how gutsy it really is to reach out and ask for help. And it's interesting, in the last week or so, I've been getting several calls from men, actually from young men who saw my profile, as it happens, on Psychology Today and happened to listen to the Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And these young men in their 20s and in their 30s, men who never in a thousand years have ever spoken to anybody about their issues and their feelings and their problems. And yesterday was a particularly interesting day. It was Sunday. I had a pretty bad cold, and I was kind of sitting around the apartment and preparing for today's show. And I get a call from a young man, and I said, listen, I'm not feeling exactly 100%. Can you wait till the coming week and we can schedule an appointment? No. He wanted to come in yesterday evening. So here we have a man who was 36 years old. He was an Israeli officer in the Israeli army. And came to America about 6 years ago and married a woman who he didn't know. Of course, as I said to him, he didn't read my book about how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing. But he told me, he said, it's true. I married a young woman. I really knew nothing about her at all. But I was so lonely. My family was in Israel and I had absolutely no connections, and I was hoping for the best. So on the phone, he told me that it was a sexual issue. And when we met in person, he was, letting me know that they had been married for a year and a half, still married, and that the marriage had never been consummated. She simply did not want to have sex. And he didn't know what to do, and was at a point where he was thinking about going out and having an affair. And this is an Orthodox Jewish man. This is not exactly par for the course what the teachings are in the Orthodoxy world. And let's face it, in any world, when we get married not with the idea of going out and having extramarital affairs. And what was also really interesting, I asked him whether or not he'd had a lot of previous sexual experience, and he said yes, he did, a lot in Israel. But because he married this young woman who he didn't know, they had never discussed sex, and of course they didn't have any touching or any real physical contact before the marriage. And I asked him, I said, have you talked to her about this other than being upset and angry? And of course, understandably so. And he said, no. And what was also really interesting, I asked him about masturbation. And I said, well, how are you able to alleviate all of the normal sexual feelings that you have? I said, do you masturbate? He said, no, that's also not okay. So culturally and from a religious point of view, he really had boxed himself in and was unable or unwilling up to this point to really have an honest conversation with his wife. So I said, look, there are basically three options here. If we're in marriages or we're in relationships that are really not working, the first, of course, is to see whether or not your partner is committed to acknowledging and addressing and resolving the issues. But before any of that can happen, there has to be some communication. There has to be a real interest and a real commitment to trying to solve the problem. Well, with this particular man, he felt, and even at the end of our session, he felt that he was not going to be able to talk to his wife about the issues in an honest way. So I told him, I said, look, A, nothing is going to change. B, you may end up having a lot of affairs or hiring hookers or spending your time on the computer watching pornography. Or you can say to your wife, look, this is not working for me and for all of us. When this, whatever this is, whether or not it's our own depression or our partner's depression or substance abuse of various different kinds, or sexual problems, or relationship issues. And we all go through so many ups and downs in our own lives. But if couples who are in relationships are not willing to take the chance, and of course there is a chance because we never know exactly what the outcome is going to be. But if we don't put our issues on the table and honestly try to resolve the problems where resolution involves discussion and some compromise and trade-offs, and of course we're looking toward, if we are being rational about this, we're looking toward finding win-win resolutions. So I spent an hour with this young man, and I felt so badly for him. And yet at this point in his life, 36-year-old young man, nice looking, successful in his business, but I suspect that he is not ready to take the step and seriously confront his wife in a loving fashion and say, look, this is not working for me anymore. And all of us in our lives, in our personal lives, in our professional lives, dealing and confrontation is never easy. Nobody ever feels terrific about going into a meeting of any kind, especially when things are dicey and when things are not really working well. And yet, if we don't, what are the alternatives? Absolutely nothing, I guarantee you, and you know this as well, that absolutely nothing will ever get resolved. So for those of you who are listening to the show right now, because I really want to personalize this for all of us, are there people in your life? Are there issues in your life that involve other people that are really getting in the way of your own individual life and of your own relationship? And you have to be really honest with yourself. And of course, confronting the person does not mean that there is going to be a positive resolution. And yet not dealing and not confronting the person and not saying, listen, my dear, or if it's a romantic relationship, you know, I love you, the relationship is really important to me. But if we don't deal, the consequences are very, very clear. Nothing is going to change. So hopefully I've been able to convince you and motivate you and inspire you as you look down the list of all the people in your life right now. Yes, it's almost the holidays, and sometimes that could be very stressful, you know, as well. If you have unfinished business with anybody, and if the unfinished business is something that is important for you to try to see, there are no guarantees what the outcome is going to be, you need to take a risk. And you need to contact the person and say, listen, there are some things that are bothering me that I would like to talk with you about. And I suggest not doing it by text or by email. Face-to-face communication still is number one. It's still the number one way of, I believe, relating to people, especially if you're relating to people that are intimate in your life, and see how it all is going to play out. But it was sad for me when he left last night that I felt that this was somebody who was absolutely not ready and was not going to take that very, very important step in trying to have a conversation with his wife. In fact, he said that he had never been able to talk about his emotions, let alone sexual issues, you know, with anybody at all. So he was a very, very brave man to come in. But I suspect that things are going to have to get a lot worse for him before he will be ready. And maybe he's never going to be ready to take some important steps and deal with his wife and deal with his relationship. And this is the point, is that if we are complicit and if we are not willing to at least try to confront issues in our own relationships, what does that really mean? What are we really doing? You know, what role are we actually playing? In fact, what we're doing is that we're saying, even though we're not saying it directly, it is okay. It is okay in this situation that you don't want to have sex with me. It is okay that you get drunk every night or that you're using drugs or that we are just simply off track in our relationship. So in not dealing, we're saying it's okay. And what we're doing is really enabling and encouraging behavior that upsets us, that is not in our best interest, because it is very, very easy to blame the world and to blame everybody else in our life, our partners, our colleagues. But we have to be honest with ourselves and take a very, very honest look and look at what is our role in our relationship, why things are not okay. What are we doing or what are we not doing that is keeping the dynamic going? So hopefully I have convinced you that if you have unfinished business with anybody, that today, and if not today, tomorrow, you will make that call and that you will initiate some contact, especially if the relationships are important, to try to see if the two people, if you will be able to acknowledge and address and resolve issues. And it's absolutely amazing what can happen when people actually take that step. And years ago, you know, when I was working with couples, I would try to predict what couples were going to make it and what couples would either end the relationships or get a divorce. And I was always surprised. I was always actually pleasantly surprised to see that people who were in a really, really bad place, who were serious about turning things around, they came out way ahead and their relationships were stronger and better than you would ever dream possible. So as the Nike logo tells us, just absolutely do it. And I had a couple of emails from listeners who regularly listen to the Ask BD show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And they wanted to know, who are the people that I treat in my practice and what kinds of problems are these people presenting with? Well, I would say that typically depression and anxiety are the primary reasons why people are calling. And then it is my job to figure out with my patients what the depression and what the anxiety is really all about. Is it about old issues stemming from people's family of origin, things that were never resolved, sexual abuse of various different kinds, physical abuse, emotional abuse, past relationships that simply are continuing to get in the way of the present? So I have to be kind of a detective. And of course, the depression and the anxiety and the substance abuse and sexual issues, they're always symptomatic of other things. So I have to dig deep and really get to the root of the problem. And as I've said to you every single week, today now is the Ask Beattie Show 278 shows. I can hardly believe it, where the time has gone during the past several years. But I've often, and I say this to you every single week, is that even though we cannot change our history, we cannot change something that happened a second ago, things that are getting in the way of our lives, our old issues, the unfinished business, the skeletons in the closet, these are things that you are able to deal with in a good therapeutic setting by emotionally working through what did and what did not happen, so that then, and really only then, are you able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. Because I think of a number of different people that I'm seeing right now who came from really very, very abusive family backgrounds, where there was physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, abuse with a capital A. And what's happened is that unless these things can be sorted out as best as possible, and as best as possible does not mean that you need to forgive, and you're certainly not going to forget, but the process is something that helps people. The strength, the drama of what happened in their earlier lives, that drama is able to be diminished to a very, very large degree, so that it is not interfering currently with people's present life. So that if you're just going into a therapeutic setting and you're just going to talk about today, when there are all kinds of earlier problems that have complicated your today, you're frequently going to miss the boat. So both things are important: working through the old issues as best as we can, and then of course, being committed and taking concerted effort to do what is in your best interest, even though it may not feel comfortable initially. Because, for example, whether or not we're talking about eating or exercise, a lot of people will say, well, I'm not used to doing that, and this is something that I don't have time for in my life. And yet, if we're not eating well, if we're not disciplined about our diet, if we are not disciplined about exercise, we are going to experience consequences, emotional, psychological, and physical. So again, it is about people's commitment, which is why when people call me for therapy, and people know that I am a very demanding therapist, I have absolutely no patience for people to come in and just complain about their problems and not be committed to doing the work and to trying to take a new course of action in how they're negotiating their life and their relationships and the world. So I really do expect that after we look at the root issues, and people are emotionally dealing with the trauma and the upset and the anger and the pain and the things that happened and didn't happen in their lives and in their relationships, you then get to a point where you absolutely have to take some positive action. Otherwise, you find yourself on a never-ending merry-go-round or a never-ending roller coaster ride. And all you end up doing is complaining and whining and moaning, and that nothing changes. So this is where action, action is just so vital. It's you can't just do the action in itself if you haven't understood what your traumas are all about, what your depression is all about, because that really keeps us stuck. But at some point, you know, when I'm looking at, for example, people's diets, you know, people will say, well, I don't want to have a plant-based diet. I really don't like fish. Well, we know, as an example, that plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish and nuts are things that help us, you know, to be really, really healthy. So what does one do when you're trying to convince somebody who's actually paying for advice and paying for therapy, who refuse to do what is in their best interest? And all one can do, I mean, we really can't change anybody, even therapists. We can't change anybody. All we can do, we can encourage people. We can try to give people the tools that they need to live their lives in a way that is really in their best interest. But in the final analysis, people really do need to make choices. They can decide they're not going to exercise. They're not going to do what they need to do to keep their bodies in good shape. Many people that I see, and you know, I've talked a lot about the importance of eliminating toxins in our life and not just chemicals. I talk a lot about looking at the people in our life, and there is a time and a place where we really do need to eliminate people who make us crazy. So that having supportive people in our life is really important. And yet, if we encourage and if we enable toxic people and toxic relationships, you know exactly what the outcome of that is going to be. You're going to continue to feel badly. You're going to continue to be depressed and anxious. You're going to continue to complain. So at some point, we all have to make decisions about what we're going to do, whether or not we're talking about our diet or exercise or chemical toxins or toxic people, what we are going to do to eliminate things that are self-destructive, self-sabotaging and destructive, and to do things that are really in our best interest. And for many, many people, that is a huge, huge shift in thinking, especially if over the years you have been comfortable, in quotes, with doing things that are basically self-destructive, self-sabotaging, and destructive. And this is why really good therapy, I have to say, can absolutely, absolutely make all the difference in the world. Well, I had a couple of really, really interesting articles that I was reading over the weekend that I wanted to share with you. One was written by a friend and a colleague, Dr. Diana Kirshner, who is a psychologist and who has actually been married for almost 50 years to a man who I grew up with as a child in Winnipeg. And this is what Diana has to say, and she is the author of Finding Love in 90 Days, and we have debated that. I think that it takes a lot more than 90 days to really find out who somebody is and isn't. In fact, it's not that I think, but my research found that it actually takes close to a year to really find out who your partner is and who your partner is not. But she's a terrific woman. And this is what she says. She says, lasting passionate love in happy couples, it's not achieved by reading love advice or self-help books, although that certainly can help, or dumping the problem partner you're with and going on to the next grass is greener pasture. Happy couples create lasting passionate love the hard way through daily, weekly, and monthly practice four key strategies that she has identified. And of course, we know that these days, marriages are dying out faster and faster. You know, every week when I talk about the divorce statistics, I mean, it's really sad and really shocking. I mean, we have 48% divorce rate for first marriages, 68% divorce for second marriages, and 74%. Divorce statistics for third marriages. Three women are killed every single day. So it's very, very easy to become extremely pessimistic about relationships. But I can tell you that there are happy couples out there. And I have to say, I'm so grateful for my husband, Jim, and that we have a wonderful, loving, and passionate marriage. But, you know, the thing is that the average marriage lasts only a little under 7 years, and yet research shows that married people are healthier, and that's absolutely true, wealthier, and happier. And in fact, marital happiness contributes far more to personal happiness than any other factor, including work and friendship and satisfaction. And this is especially true for happy couples who've been together in long-term relationships. And not only that, but studies also show that lasting, passionate love in happy couples exists and is not as rare as you might think. Well, I think it's certainly not as much as we would like. So the bottom line is that if you want personal excellence in your life, it is critical. This is the point. It is what we need to do. It is critical to create, nurture, and sustain a committed and lasting, passionate love relationship. And of course, that does not mean that there are not going to be issues and that there are not going to be a lot of ups and downs in your relationship, but it's about how we are going to deal. Not like my patient last night who chose not to deal, but how we are going to deal, what kinds of skills we are going to get, what kinds of tools we are going to hone to be able to maintain and sustain a happy relationship. So Diana says this, Diana Krishna says this. She says, like a crusader, she says, I've dedicated the last 40 years of my life to finding the holy grail of love. And she has identified, four different things that we all need to do to be able to maintain and sustain love and passion in our relationships. So this is what she says. Happy couples, passionate love action one, spending time alone as a couple. My, oh my, I have been saying that for years about the importance of keeping the couple, not the children, not the work, at the top of your list of priorities. So research shows that couples who report the highest level of satisfaction spend the most amount of time alone together. And this means, she says, no kids, no friends, no family, just the two of you. So that is a concerted effort that we all need to take and make sure that it happens, that we make it happen. And the thing is that work and children and all kinds of things can really take over. So what Diana Kirshner suggests is that at least twice a week and once during the day at night, you know, we just spend some time, and if we have young children, to either get a babysitter, or if the children are a little older, to be able to say, you know, mom and dad need some time to ourselves. Number two, happy couples, passionate love action two, holding listening sessions. So this is what Diana found, that research shows that effective communication is a common trait of healthy couples. Now, the fact that most of us never learned what effective communication is, I mean, that's a whole other thing, which is why, you know, I've been saying for years that one of the most important courses that we should have in our schools is teaching kids the art of effective emotional communication and problem solving. So the heart of effective communication is the ability. It's not just to talk, but it is to listen to your partner without judgment. So that is something that is just so important for people to do, and to not let all of the issues really just pile up. To be able to connect every single day, and if there's something that's off, not to talk about it, to be able to set a time. I mean, people are working, there may be children, there may be a lot of other things going on, and to be able to say, listen, honey, there's a couple of things that I would like to talk with you about. When would be a good time later on today? And I do not suggest that you do this when you're running out of the house and going to work or before you are going to bed. So Diana Kirshner talked about the importance of scheduling, and I totally agree, formal 10-minute listening sessions with each other every other day. And she says in these sessions, one person gets to talk, free associate, say whatever it is on their minds, where the other simply listens with full attention. The listener, she says, does not speak. No matter what, we use a clock and honored a 10-minute session. And anything that was said at that time was sacred and could not be brought up during an argument. You know how often you say, well, you always do this and you always do that, and 10 years ago you said that. That is not good and effective communication. Number three, happy couples, passionate love action. Number three, planning for sex. Do you know how many couples and how many people that I know of all ages and stages in life, including people who I treat, who are basically living in sexless marriages? They're too busy, they're too tired, they have kids, the work, the this, the that, and before you know it, months and sometimes even years go by, and you look at your partner and you ask yourself, what's happened? And even though sex is clearly not the most important predictor of a loving and healthy long relationship, it is something that is important, and you should not let your sex life go. So Diana goes on to say that, of course, we know that sex releases oxytocin, which is the cuddle or bonding hormone. And this is a powerful hormone that triggers the nurturing instinct toward newborns. And sex also creates a shared endorphin release so that the partners associate feeling good with each other. And on the other hand, infidelity is the biggest love buster. So having regular sex, she says, I say, is a really important, and it's a really good thing. So what happens when you find that your sex life is off? Well, you need to talk about it. And it's not about blaming anybody. And of course, you know, when I look at people who are having sexual difficulties or who are actually living in sexless marriages, again, it's about finding out what is that all about. Having sexual problems and living in a sexless marriage, I mean, these are symptoms of other things that are happening or are not happening in your relationship. For example, does one or both people, are you suffering from depression or anxiety or any other psychiatric problem that is really taking away your interest in your drive? What about medication? Do you know how many medications on the market that have sexual side effects, including many, if not most, psychiatric drugs? And this is something that we have to be very, again, proactive with our doctors. And we ask about side effects. You know, I had a shingles vaccine a couple of days ago, and I had absolutely no idea that my arm was going to be sore for a couple of days. And fortunately, the soreness has eased off. But we don't think about asking about sex. Are there going to be sexual side effects if we are taking drug A, B, C, or D? And it's important, and it's an important question that we really do need to ask our doctors. We also have to look at our relationships. If we are not in a good place in our relationships, if we are angry, if we are hurt, if we are upset, this is not going to happen, especially for women. The last thing, and I can certainly attest as a woman, that the majority of women are going to want to do is jump into bed and have sex if we are furious, if we are angry, if we are saddened by our relationship. So that has to be looked into as well. What about pain? I have been seeing a couple of women, young women actually, in their late 20s, who've been having difficulty having intercourse. And they are in what I understand is to be really healthy relationships. So what you need to do, of course, is go and have an OBGYN visit and find out what it is. Is there something physical that is going on that is causing you pain of any kind? And that is regardless of your age and stage in life. Don't just assume that your sex life is going to be over because you're having pain, because you really, again, want to get to the root of the problem and figure out what to do. You know, there's a young woman, and I talked to her on the phone a couple of days ago, 29 years old, and this is her first sexual relationship. And she's in a relationship with a man who she says she loves very much. They've had lots of ups and downs, but she is saying that she is very, very uncomfortable with the act of intercourse. So I suggested to her, I said, listen, I said, there are many lubricants on the market that can make it a lot easier for penetration. And what do you think she said to me? She says, well, he does not want me to use a lubricant. He said to me that if I'm really feeling turned on and if I really love him and care for him, that I will not need to use anything at all in terms of a lubricant. Well, we discussed it, and I said that he was absolutely wrong, that was his belief and that was his ego. So she started, she agreed that she was going to give this a shot, and she told him that she was going to go to the drugstore and that she was going to buy a natural lubricant. And when we talked on the phone a couple of days ago, she says, you're not going to believe it. She says, I am now able to enjoy intercourse without any pain and without any discomfort. So I said to her, so what did your boyfriend have to say about all of this? So she laughed and she said, well, my boyfriend says that I should call you a lot more often because there are a lot of other things in our sex life that need to get started out. So that we have, there are a lot of myths and there are a lot of false beliefs about all kinds of things including what should and should not be happening in the bedroom. And of course, with men who are suffering from premature ejaculation, there are exercises that you can actually do so that you are able to control the ejaculation. And of course, with men who have issues with erectile dysfunction, you need to have a really good physical. There could be some cardio issues, but so that it's always about, regardless of what the problems are and what the presenting problems are, it's about being a detective and trying to figure out what it is about, and much, much more importantly, what we need to do to resolve the problem. So it's problem solution. It's not problem avoid. It's not problem deny. It's not problem put it into a drawer or under the carpet. It's a continual commitment to oneself and to one's relationship, is that when issues arrive, is that they will always arrive, whether or not you are in the greatest relationship of your life. There are always going to be ups and downs, always. And you go through nice periods and you think that you're never going to have another upset again. And then, you know, lo and behold, there's something that has come up. But successful couples are committed on an ongoing basis, regardless of what the issues are, to always be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve their relationships and come up with win-win solutions. Now, Diana Kirshner goes on to actually cite John Gottman, who's a very famous marital researcher, and she says that John Gottman's marital research shows that lasting passionate love in happy couples is sustained by certain rules. So listen to John Gottman's rules. Happy couples relate to each other with a golden 5-to-1 rule. Now, I hadn't read this before and I loved it. That is, they have 5 positive loving exchanges for every critical or negative one. And on the other hand, marriages with high degrees of conflict, with lots of contempt, criticism, defensiveness, and the silent treatment, are unhappy and they are very unlikely to fail. So if you happen to be in a relationship with someone, you have to be really honest with yourself. Do you find that most of your interactions are positive, that you're saying things like, I really love you, I really admire you, I really appreciate what you have done, thank you? Or are you one of these people who is spending a lot of time, if not most of your time, being critical? So this 5-to-1 rule is something that I think that we all really need to think about, because it's very, very easy to get into a very negative mode, a very critical mode, which over a period of time can be extremely, extremely damaging to the relationship. Well, I'd sent my friend Diana Kirshner an email yesterday. I was hoping that she was going to be able to be on the show today, but I told her that I would nonetheless, if she couldn't make it, that I would definitely review her article. And I think it's a really good article. Well, there was another piece that I wanted to share with you about happy relationships and happy lives. And this was a piece that I actually found on the internet. Want a happier, more fulfilling life? This was a 75-year Harvard study says, focus on this one thing. And of course, for those of you who've been listening to me for the last 278 shows, you've heard me talk about this before. We've already uncovered the key to long-term happiness and fulfillment. And this is a piece by Patrick Ewers. Positive alacrity. Alacrity is the art of creating micro experiences that have an emotionally uplifting impact on others. And that's a lot of people writing about and searching for something that, according to a groundbreaking Harvard study, has already been found. So this study, the Harvard study, tracked 724 participants from varying walks of life over the course of 75 years. And we've already uncovered the key to long-term happiness and fulfillment. And the answer is our relationships. And Dr. Robert Wallander, who's the director of the Harvard study of adult development, this is what he says. That the clearest message that we get from this 75-year study is this: good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period, which is why we need to extricate ourselves from toxic relationships and even a little bit of toxicity. As I was saying to one of my patients recently, it is still poison. In other words, the quality of our life, emotionally, physically, and mentally, is directly proportional to the quality of our relationships, which is why every single week I am asking you to take a look at the relationships in your life, at the people in your life, and be really honest with yourself to see whether or not there are people in your life who you may need to confront, or there are people in your life who actually may need to go. But there's a catch. If there's one thing that most of us have learned, it's this: is just knowing a lot of people isn't enough. The true fulfillment in relationships is about genuine connection. And one of the most efficient ways to form that connection is by practicing what we call at Mind Maven positive alacrity. Alacrity, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. A skill that we define as creating micro experiences that cause an emotional uplifting in others. And as he says, did we really need a 75-year study to tell us that relationships are important? Probably not, he says. I bet many of you already knew that. So why do we so often struggle to treat many of the most important relationships in our lives with the reverence and priority that we know they deserve? Are you being good? Are you there for people in your life who are important to you? You know, for example, do any of these situations sound familiar to you? You know, for example, when under stress, you may have a tendency to be ruder to your spouse than you'd ever dream of being rude to a complete stranger. So we have to be mindful of our own behavior. When building a business, you're willing to work 60-hour weeks, but somehow you never have time to check in with lifelong friends. And of course, that is always a mistake. And speaking of business, you may fail to consistently and proactively invest in deepening the professional relationships that might provide the breakthrough opportunities you need. See, it's not just about going to events and giving out your cards. We really do have to reach out and nurture relationships, whether or not they're going to be personal relationships, romantic relationships, or business relationships. They simply do not happen on their own. And although many things in life are deadline and urgency driven, relationships almost never are. And as a result, they're often one of the first parts of our lives that we tend to neglect until we find the time. And then we wonder, why don't we have closer friends? Why is our relationship, you know, not better? It's because it is a lack of investment in time that really causes the demise and oftentimes the disappearance of relationships that have been important to us. But the good news is that building those deep, meaningful relationships, it isn't as daunting or time-consuming as it may sound. In fact, by focusing on one habit, anyone can build more fulfilling relationships. And the secret factor controlling the quality of your relationships. So what is it? What determines the level of fulfillment we find in our relationships? It isn't simply knowing the other person. What makes you feel or fulfilled isn't the relationship itself, but the interaction that make that relationship up. You know, for example, and if you value relationships, you know, some of the things that we oftentimes forget to do and we forget to say, you know, I want you to know how much I appreciate you. Do you say that to your partner? Do you say that to your friend? Do you say that to your children? Do you say that to your colleagues? It's really important. Okay? Number two, thank you. Thank you for sacrificing your time for our vision. For example, you're working on a project with, you know, with somebody at work. You've been working hard. Have you taken the time to say thank you? You know, we had a really big task. And if you're the boss in particular, to be able to say to your team, thank you. Thank you for sacrificing your time and your vision. Number three, so you never have to lose something again, okay? Cole, a diehard Atlanta Falcons fan, laughed in amusement as he wrote back, thanks, but I never have to lose something important again. So we have to be mindful of the things that are important and the things that we need to do to be able to maintain and sustain relationships that we deem to be important in our lives. So it's not just talking about the fact that we want good relationships. In the final analysis, it is what we do. So this term, positive allocricity, at the end of the day, this concept is all about consistently delivering small, simple experiences that leave people feeling genuinely uplifted. Okay? So when you think that something positive and you genuinely believe it, let's not hang back. Let's voice it. And let the people in our lives know that what they're doing is important, that we appreciate, them. And this is exactly how relationships are going to be able to thrive. So let me ask you, are there people, the holidays are coming up, and I know that it can be sometimes stressful for a lot of people, particularly for people who are alone or where they have a lot of issues in their family. But are there people in your life that you need to pick up the phone and call or email and text and let them know that you have been thinking about them, you know, recognizing them? Let them know that you appreciate them. Let them know if you haven't seen them in a while, perhaps you could make some plans that you can actually get together. which is something that would be a wonderful thing. You know, the text and the Facebooking live and all of that is great. But, you know, if relationships are important, we need to make the time to be able to sometimes get away from our comfort zones and actually perhaps get on a train or get on a plane and see in people or who are really important to us in our life. Because a single positive interaction can have a multiplying effect, building and spreading further than you would ever imagine. Because every single show that I do here on the Progressive Radio Network, I like to leave you with some things that you can ponder. And even more importantly, not only to ponder, but to be able to motivate and inspire you to perhaps do, actually take some action and do some things that perhaps you have neglected in the past, but things that will enhance and enrich your own life and your relationships that you claim to cherish. And I think that the holiday time is as good a time as ever, although we certainly do not need to wait for holidays to reach out and to let people know that we're thinking about them and we love them. And perhaps you need to apologize for the fact that the year has come and it's almost gone, and that you wish that you had been more available, or you wish that you had had more communication. And I think that being able to own our own behavior, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is something that also is very, very important when it comes to enriching our relationships. Because we really have to be real. And if relationships are something that we say are really important to us, it's not just about talking about it, but it's about reaching out. And you know, with the holiday times too, you know, for people who may not have families, you know, one of the greatest gifts that we can give, not only to ourselves, but to others, is volunteering. I know years and years ago, I remember volunteering at a soup kitchen for Thanksgiving. And it was probably one of the most uplifting experiences for me. I mean, it was great that the people were able to have a really wonderful meal. But it was just so great for me to feel that I was giving something of myself, something very tangible and emotional, to make somebody else's day a really great day. So that, for example, if you happen to be alone on Thanksgiving and during the holidays, you know, rather than just feeling sad perhaps or bad, reaching out and giving to somebody else.